good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the second hour of the program. Remember, at 11 o'clock, as we usually are here on WBSM, we'll be joined by the mayor of New Bedford, John Mitchell. It's now my great pleasure to bring to you former professor, now retired Bob Waxler, good friend of mine. He was my instructor, a friend of mine. His son, of course, Jeremy Waxler, my occasional wingman, is here in studio as well. Gentlemen, how are you?
Great to be here. Really terrific. Good to see you.
Nice to see you. It's good to be seen. It's better to be seen in this condition than waked, right? Jeremy, how are you, my friend? You're wearing a tie.
Yeah, I came from court, New Bedford District Court.
How are things at New Bedford District Court?
Hectic. Very busy.
Yeah.
Never slow over there.
No. But people get their rights heard and often get to go home, right?
When I'm their lawyer, yes.
Yes, when Jeremy Waxler is your lawyer, you get to go home. Robert Waxler, of course, for many years, a professor of English out at UMass Dartmouth. Many of you in the audience have had him as a professor. I did. We did a number of books, including Norman Mailer together.
Norman Mailer's a man.
You knew Norman Mailer.
I knew Norman, not very well, but we did exchange letters and... I actually recently wrote a letter to the New Yorker magazine and celebrating his 100th birthday. Put it in there, and so I do feel close to him.
Yeah, I think he stayed at your house, right?
I remember a time in my class when we were talking about Norman Mailer.
Yes,
the book was an American Dream,
and yes.
it was a fairly new book at that time, and there were some scenes that were really for that period, this is now 50, 60 years ago, they were really on the edge.
Very on the edge.
And we were trying to have a good discussion. I always love good discussion in class. But it was hard to get people to stir them up enough to talk about some of those scenes. I think I called on you.
You did. I remember we read this. Because I had done the reading. I wouldn't have taken the class if I didn't. I enjoy Norman Mailer. Really, a lot of American literature. Anyway, I had done the reading. I'm not sure everyone in the class had professor. And I'm looking around going, you people aren't shocked? And in comes Professor Waxler, kind of laughing, and goes, what did everyone think? Of course, it has to do with a scene. If you read the book, you know the scene. I can't get into all of it, but the main character kills the maid, throws her out the window, throws his wife out the window.
Throws the wife out the window.
And goes down and has relations with the maid.
Right.
The German maid.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And he had been in World War II. The whole thing was a very interesting book. What brings you here today, Professor Waxler?
Well, today, a few different things. I wrote a recent book with a good friend of mine from Brown called You Say, I Say. Mm-hmm. It's just out. People can get it almost anywhere. And I feel very strongly about it. I think in many ways it's an interesting exchange about literature and about language and about friendship. It's written as a dialogue. We call it a series of letters. It really comes out of a series of emails that we sent to each other over a fairly long period of time. And it evokes the feelings that we had when we were at Brown. We were both undergraduates at Brown at the time in the 1960s. We were both English majors, and we talked a lot in those days about what we thought was great literature. We even wrote a poetry pamphlet together, which sort of signaled to the world, at least in our mind, signaled to the world that we were going to be great writers.
Right? Youth.
The story goes on. We are continuously in the book talking about all kinds of literature that has really moved us in one way or another, has given us a depth of understanding and meaning about our lives over what amounts now to 80 years. So
he turned 81 yesterday.
I feel very close to the book, and I hope
you turned 80 yesterday.
81
yesterday.
That's
so it's
right,
no fluke.
Birthday.
It's no fluke.
That's right.
He's 80. You turned 81 yesterday.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thanks a lot.
I love these when people share their letters, you know, and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams wrote back and forth. I mean, that's an amazing collection of, and you're doing emails here.
What is it?
You're doing emails here.
Yeah, well, the way the book started was we happened to meet in New York City, and we were talking about things, and we were both retired from our long-term jobs, and we started a series of email. David Beckman, my friend, lives on California. I live in Massachusetts, obviously, here. And at that point, it was just an exchange of you know, friendship as
sure.
much as anything. And since we had always felt so close through the many bull sessions that we had in the dorms and other places, and talking about literature and being in seminar classes together at Brown, I think just naturally gravitated to talking about our thoughts over all these years about literature. And you know, one day we said, look, you know, this is interesting. We're enjoying it.
Yes.
We're getting a lot out of it. Maybe other people could get something out of it too. And that's when we really said to ourselves, you know, maybe we could make this into a book. Why don't we think of it not just as a random series of emails, but begin to put it together as a book. And it came together that way.
The book is You Say, I Say. We're speaking with Robert Waxler. He's here in the studio. Many of you had him as a professor out at UMass Dartmouth. You've always believed and used it, literature, to help people. You were very instrumental. I think it was your program out at the Bristol County House of Correction that helps inmates and other people learn about themselves through the writings of others. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's the Changing Lives Through Literature program. Mm-hmm. And I actually started that with Bob Kane, who was a judge in the local community at the time, and Wayne St. Pierre was a great probation officer who is mm-hmm. now retired and still very much involved in the consciousness, at least, of the program. And we didn't think that, you know, exactly how it was going to spread or what might happen, but we, again, thought it was a good idea. My notion there was, and I told Bob Kane this after playing tennis with him one day and listening to him talk about how the same people were coming before his bench time after time. He was putting them in jail. It was a kind of vicious cycle. They would get out, and then he'd see them in front of his bench again.
Yeah.
So I said, well, listen, Bob, I really deeply believe in literature. I think mm-hmm. literature can make a difference. I think it can help create empathy, which I
yes.
think is one of the key ingredients of human life. Why don't we try an experiment? You take eight guys or so coming before your bench. I want tough guys, I said. So if it does work, people can't immediately come back and say it was just a setup.
Right, right.
And we'll take these eight guys. I'll get a nice seminar room out at the campus, and we'll do for maybe 12 weeks or so, we'll have a series of readings. I'll try to choose books that I think will resonate with the people in the class, and they'll come out to the campus. Some of them may never have been out there before.
Right.
And there may be some transformation. We might see something. I give Bob a lot of credit. I'm not sure every judge would immediately have jumped to that.
Right, right.
Nevertheless,
right.
we started that.
Yeah.
And Wayne, again, was very instrumental in that from the probation side. He helped us to decide who the first eight people would be. And I got to tell you, that first group had 42 convictions. So they were tough guys.
Yep.
42 convictions before we started the program. And I thank Bob for that that group. And I remember the first night sitting around that table. Everybody was a little anxious. We weren't sure what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I had chosen the books. They were books by people like Kent Kesey, and I think Mailer might have been in that first group. But, you know, these were all men.
Yep.
So I was trying to find books that might resonate with some of their own feelings and their own experiences of consciousness.
Sure.
And after the first session, it looked pretty good, Chris. It looked pretty good because I remember one guy coming up and saying, you know, Professor Wexler, I really don't like to read. But we had read a short story to get started in class and then discuss it. And he said, you know, this short story reminds me of me.
Really?
It's my story.
All right.
So I knew something was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, something was going on. They were sort of connecting with the stories. And it helped me to realize that what people read, generally, they read themselves as well as the book. The book reads you as much as you think mm-hmm. about the book. And I could see that, you know, what had happened with this guy was potentially could happen with a whole bunch of other people.
Right.
And so that it took off from there, and we were fortunate because we got some early publicity from the New York Times, got interested in it, and the Boston Globe, and the Parade Magazine, which in those days used to be delivered every Sunday.
That's
in
right.
The newspapers.
That's a big deal.
And it was. Oh, yeah, because everybody was reading that.
Yeah.
And then other, you know, state judicial systems said, geez, you know, this is interesting. Rather than sending people to jail, I mean, that was the idea. If we could send them to read
right.
and then get excited about reading and send them into the classroom rather than the jail cell, we might really have something here. And that's what began to happen in a lot of cases. We had, over time, literally thousands of people go through the program. Not everybody was successful, obviously, but the success rate was pretty good. And it continues.
Yes.
It continues today. Jeremy is sort of taken over in many ways the facilitation of the New Bedford program, which is the one that I was most enthused about. And
we're speaking with Professor.
I hear he's doing a great job.
Robert Wexler. He's the author of another book. You Say, I Say. We're talking about his program about reading out for inmates to start reading. Jeremy, how's the program going?
It's going well. We've had four over the past 2 years. We do a spring semester and a fall semester. Judge Lamar over in New Bedford does it with me, and the probation office is really good in helping out and coming to the classes and getting the people involved in the classes.
What titles are you using?
So I've changed it up every semester, kind of, but some recurring ones we use of Mice and Men, Night. I actually did Death of a Salesman this year. It has to be kind of a shorter book, but I also do a lot of short stories. Raymond Carver, I know you like.
Yeah, Raymond Carver's great, very
yeah.
great.
So they're very interested. The people get into it, and at first couple of weeks they're kind of shy and not into reading, and then by the end they say that they're going to read more. And then I see some of them after, and they say, "I started reading again," or "I'm reading now." So it's great.
We have Jeremy Wexler and Bob Wexler here in the studio. Night's a good book.
Yeah, sad.
Sad, short.
Yes.
It's about the concentration camps, really. What other books do you like to use?
Of Mice and Men. In terms of those are the main books. Like I said, it's mostly short stories. Carver, we do Where Are You Going, Where Have You Been by Joyce Carol Oates.
Mm-hmm.
Greasy Lake by T.C. Boyle. Some Walter Mosley short stories we did this semester. Some George Saunders short stories. But in terms of...
Where do you get the students from, so to speak? Are you using Bristol County?
Yeah, well, there's the probation office in New Bedford is very helpful. All the probation officers are seeking people. They have signs at probation one of the probationers wants to join the class. So they recruit them, and then I facilitate, and the judge is helpful in recruiting people, too. And what happens is it used to be a condition of probation that you'd have to do it, but they don't do that anymore, and so it's not a condition of probation, but if you do go and come and take the class and graduate, you get 3 months off the end of your probation.
Nice.
Yes.
I mean, I like to read, but I know my brothers didn't read as much. My parents would have probably put them in this program. Do you have to commit a crime to be in the program, Jeremy? Do you?
Pretty much, yeah.
No, but, that's no reason to commit a crime, though.
Neil can come.
Neil can come, right?
Yeah, he could come.
He's probably committed a couple. I'm not going to put it out there. But anyway, Professor Waxler, the You Say, I Say, where can people get this book?
Well, you could get it certainly any of the local bookstores. If they didn't have it right there, they can easily order. It'd be on their list. Amazon.com, the usual sites in terms of the high-tech world. The book is published by a publisher in New York, Rivertown's
yes.
Books. They're a very nice publisher. I know you're sort of holding a book there. If you
yes.
look inside, it's just a really good job in terms of the printing, what he thought of. There's a number of good reviews in the book. And my hope is that people will read it and just, enjoy it. One of the things that I have heard from a number of people, which really makes me feel good, is that they feel the joy coming
sure.
off of the page. Just, two people talking who really are excited and enthused about a particular topic. In this case, it's literature, and the arts and song. But it's friendship.
We're speaking with Robert Waxler, Professor Waxler from UMass Dartmouth, Professor Emeritus, about his new book, You Say, I Say, his conversations with his friend David Beckman. He just turned 81 the other day. Bob, how old were you when you started these letters back and forth?
That book?
Yeah.
Well, two ways of looking at that,
yes.
Chris. We might say we started it when we were freshmen.
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
How far back
does this go?
Early 60s when I was first there. And that's when I first met David. I remember it was, in this freshman dorm at Mead House. We were walking around. And we started talking about poems and literature. It was the first time we had ever met. And it's just sort of, sometimes you make this instant connection with another person
yes.
out of common interest. And then we both joined the honors program in English that they had at Brown at the time. And so there were these small seminars. You got to know all these people because it was so small, mm-hmm. Sitting around the table talking about things. And I even had to show you what kind of idiot I was or how committed I was at the time. I had on the wall in front of my desk, I felt so strongly about being a writer. That was what I wanted to do. I had a note to myself which said, I'm working hard on a novel. If it's not done by age 25, I might kill myself.
Thankfully, you didn't do that. Did you finish the novel?
Well, no, I didn't. But you know what happened instead? I became an English professor and I kept writing.
Yes, and inspiring others to write. Inspiring others to read and write.
Absolutely. And we did do the, as I mentioned earlier, we during those years, those first 3-4 years while we were undergraduates, we did do a poetry book together. So I figured I'd give myself a break and say, this is a temporary thing. It's a sign that things are going to work out.
Yes.
It'll be all right.
Things have worked out pretty well, Professor.
Yeah, they have. I've had a very lucky and very fortunate life in so many ways.
Bob Wax, I appreciate you coming in. Jeremy, I appreciate you coming in as well. Hopefully I don't see you in a professional capacity, but more in a social capacity. Thank you, gentlemen, so much.
Well, one thing about Jeremy, which I really admire, it's just one of many things, is, and I found this to be the case, especially through that Changing Lives Through Literature program, meeting a number of the lawyers and judges that are involved in the program, that there are various kinds of people within a profession. Mm-hmm. There are people who are very interested in law and very good at it, lawyers, judges on the one side. And then there are, people who love literature, mm-hmm. academics, in a sense, have chosen to be, work at universities, be scholars or whatever. But it's a rare combination, but there are some. It's a rare combination of what I would call a call a legal lawyer, mm-hmm. or a kind of, you know, a writer of the law.
Yes.
In other words, somebody who understands, and not only understands, but has a great feel for both the legal language and the legal profession, and the language of the arts, novels, plays, and that whole sensibility. And they're not the same. They're not the same. But if you can combine the two, I think you've got something extra special, because we need both literature and the law.
We do. And we have it in Jeremy.
And I think we have, exactly. I believe that.
Yeah, no.
Jeremy is one of the few people I know who really has combined both of them. And part of what makes that so wonderful in general is that people who have achieved that can be in a courtroom, they can understand how the law fits into a particular case, but they also realize the limitations of the law. The law has got a certain kind of language, a certain culture to it. But if they've also read novels, poems, you know, there's a different sense, there's the humanity,
right.
much more the humanity side of it, the feelings, the emotions, the empathy that we were talking about
yes.
before. So when you're looking at the person who's on trial, you've got to take those things into consideration too. It's not just a, you know, either one way or the other.
It's not a conveyor belt.
It's a human being, and with all the imperfections that a human being always carries with them.
Jeremy, if somebody gets in trouble and they want to get into this program, they don't have to get in trouble to get into the program, but what do they do when they end up in court, Jeremy, and they say, I want to go read with Jeremy and the judges and read some Norman Mailer, some Raymond Carver? What do they do?
They talk to their probation officer, tell them that they want to get into the class. Probation officer will contact me and the judge, and we'll get them into the next class. I have one. Are you ending?
No, go ahead.
Just one last thing is, it's interesting because over COVID we did a ton of Zooms with all the lawyers on the Zoom, and then the other day I had a Changing Lives Through Literature Zoom where we facilitators across the state were on a Zoom. We did that for an hour, just talked about the class, and I came out of it and I was telling everyone that it's so much more pleasant doing it with the facilitators of Changing Lives Through Literature than being on a Zoom with a bunch of lawyers.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you're actually maybe getting something accomplished by yeah. reading and helping people out. Because, you know, when people get in trouble with the law, sometimes that's a changing point for them, right?
Yes.
In other words, people get in trouble. There's no doubt about it. Some of us were born with great parents, so we're able to kind of make our way through without getting... As my dad used to say, there's trouble and there's trouble with paperwork, right? Some of us are able to avoid trouble with paperwork, but you're in the world where they don't.
Right.
And then it's maybe a wake-up call, hopefully, for people. And they get an opportunity to see other people through literature that are like them.
Yes,
they
exactly.
I like that a lot, Chris, the way you're putting it, too. Because a lot of it has to do with being able to sort of step out of yourself a little bit and see other people from a different angle. Let me just briefly say a couple of things in that context. This has happened a number of times over the years that I've experienced, which I think really says something about the power of literature, too. One is that I see it that when people are reading, and then it's not just the reading, it's also getting together and talking with 8 or 9 other people who've read the same book.
Right.
But it's as if each person has read a slightly different book.
Mm-hmm.
And what is amazing about that is that the discussion itself brings out those differences. People say, geez, you know, I didn't think about that, but I can see it's there. I thought one way about that, but now I can see there's another perspective, there's another angle on this thing. A lot of people have said, you know, I always thought I was a terrible guy. But now I look at, you know, what's happening to this character. He is, in many ways, a terrible guy. And it says he's doing things that would get anybody upset.
Right.
But at the same time, when I hear what people are saying, and you know, they see some good things about them. They see possibilities in them, and I like to believe, you know, the guy who's thinking about this, you know, I like to believe that I've got that potential in me.
Sure.
The greatest story, perhaps, that comes out of this for me, over all the years that I've been in this program, let me just briefly go, just take a couple of minutes, is because I think it captures so much of what the program's all about. I remember one night we were reading Old Man and the Sea, yeah, the Hemingway story. Yeah. A lot of people know that story. It's about an old man down in Cuba. He's a fisherman. His name's Santiago. He's somewhat alienated from the other fishermen. He goes out every day. He's got a lot of bad luck. Has a lot of trouble catching fish. And he struggles with that. He does everything possible to be able to bring home a fish.
Yes.
And be seen as a successful person within the community. But he's just having problems doing that. And then one day he's able to, you know, begin to see what, in a positive way, that his own possibilities might be.
Yes.
So he's got a certain heroic quality to him because he's been trying no matter how many times he's been down and out.
He doesn't give up.
Boxer who's been down, but he doesn't stay down. He gets up again. So anyway, we read the story. We talked about it, which is the usual way of doing things through the Changing Lives through Literature program. And then supposedly the next week we were on to a new book. But I remember one guy in the group sitting around the table, we had by that time made connections with each other, so we felt fairly comfortable. He said, he looked up at me and said, "Professor Wexler, before we get started on the next book,
okay,
I'd like to say one more thing about the Hemingway story, if you'll, you know, let me do it." I said, "Yeah, sure. I'd be always interested to hear what you have to say." And he said, "You know, I was thinking about the book over the week, and I started walking down Union Street." He's from New Bedford, the main street of New Bedford. He said, and we all knew what he was starting to talk about, because he had talked a little, he had an addiction problem when he came in.
Okay.
And he had been struggling with it, and we noticed the last couple of weeks that he was having more of a struggle than he had in the past. So we're all fascinated, at least, to, you know, hear what he had to say. And I said, yeah. So you're walking down Union Street. What's going on? He said, I get down to around Pleasant Street, and I begin to hear the voices from my old neighborhood. Now, as soon as he says that, you know, we all know what he's talking about, right? He's going to make the turn.
Yes.
It's just too much for him.
Yep.
He said, but something incredible happened, he says. And he said, yeah, so, yeah, what was it? He said, I heard the voice. Now, I'm not sure exactly how he heard it. I heard the voice of Santiago, the old man from the week, you know, the book, the week before.
The fisherman, yeah.
I said, well, what do you mean? He said, I could hear the voice. It was like he was in my heart. He was inside of me. And I said, geez, so what happened? I mean, I took what he was saying for, you know, the reality. So I said, what happened? What did you make, you know, the turn? What you do? He said, you know, because I heard that voice, I started thinking about Santiago. And I thought, gee, if he can do what he's done with all the problems and all the struggles and all the disappointments that he's had and still go out every morning and do the best he can and come back home at night, he said, I get inspiration from that. I think about that. And as a result, I did not make the turn that day.
That's
I walked straight down Union Street. And he said, Professor Weiss, I can't promise that's going to happen every time.
Right.
But it happened this day. And when I heard that, it was perhaps the first time that I got a really deep insight into what literature can do, the real power of it. Because I was thinking, this, what's amazing there is that this guy, a fictional character, Santiago,
right,
has become this guy's friend.
Yes.
And he's going to live in this guy's heart,
right,
all his life.
And help
all
him
his life
turn away from narcotics, at least that one time.
Absolutely. He did it. And he's all, and again, potentially, he's always there. He's going to be able to call on him. It's not
right
going to work all the time.
No.
It may get weaker, the call. But nevertheless, I think that's part of what literature can do. That's the power of literature. It's an amazing weapon against certain, you know, things that can be very harmful to people. So I think, in a way, at least metaphorically, that's part of the success of this particular program, Changing Lives Through Literature.
You can read this and more in You Say, I Say by Robert Waxler and David Beckham. Jeremy, Bob, I really appreciate you guys coming and spending the morning with me.
Hey, thank you.
Great. I enjoyed it a lot, Chris. Great to see you again. I know I haven't seen you in a while, and you're looking okay. You're looking good.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. All right,
thank
guys,
you.
We're going to stick around, and I'm going to get these gentlemen out of here, and we'll be right back. It'll be open phones in the next hour. Remember, the mayor of New Bedford will be here at 11 o'clock. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Welcome back to the program. Again, I want to thank Robert Waxler and his son Jeremy. Just a great addition to our community, and really, really appreciate them coming in and spending some time with us. We had been talking about the Brown shooting, and of course, it's totally coincidental that I had Robert Waxler in, who's a graduate, did his undergraduate at Brown University. And as I've been telling you guys since that shooting started, because I know a lot of you feel the same way I do, that while I didn't attend Brown University, it's a major part of our community and a major institution here in the United States. It's a very unique institution. I have relatives that went through there, and of course, a former professor of mine, Bob Waxler, who just was with us, and of course, Mark Stokowski, who runs these radio stations, graduate of Brown University, and really, really what happened. Thank you so much. What happened down there is so outrageous. And then the ham-handed reaction of the government, right? I mean, we pay taxes, we participate in the government, we expect that they'll do their number one job, which is, if not always able to protect us, to at least solve it when it happens, right? And make sure it doesn't happen again, or to take precautions. And I know a lot of you are as disturbed as I am about what we've been seeing down at Brown University, right? Really, really outrageous. But not as outrageous as some of those electric bills and utility bills that we're getting. That's why it's time to upgrade your home's energy system, your efficiency. But I know it can feel overwhelming. But with C2S Energy, you don't have to go it alone. Their certified experts handle everything, from assessing your home to recommending the right solutions. Whether it's insulation, windows, roofing, or high-efficiency heat pumps, they will even navigate the rebate process for you, making it simple to qualify for savings up to $16,000. Trust the team that knows the programs, the products, and how to maximize your comfort and savings. Visit C2SEnergy.com and let C2S Energy do the heavy lifting. Take a break and we'll be right back.
This portion of programming on WBSM brought to you by South Coast Health, Advanced Medicine, more care. South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
Welcome back to the program. It looks kind of cold out there. I guess it's not going to be, though. It's a pretty nice day, relatively. And what a good day to get your car over to Mack Auto Sales. Or at least make an appointment. They're located in New Bedford, right on Rivet Street. Mack Auto Sales is a family-owned business. They repair all makes and models of automobiles. Just like yours, they take care of it. So, if you need to get your car ready for the coming winter weather, and I'm sure you do, call and make an appointment today. Call them at 508-565-6221. They're open weekdays 9 to 5. You say you have a foreign car, that's perfect. Mack Auto Sales specializes in servicing foreign automobiles, just like that one you have. Make sure you mention WBSM. They'll give you a break on the bill. Ask about their aftermarket accessories and their quality used cars at Mack Auto Sales. So, I was watching the city council last couple of days. Last night they had the chief of police in, the appointments and briefings hearing. Chief Thody came over from Hartford, Connecticut, went through the assessment, all of that. You had two city councilors on the selection committee, Brian Gomes, chairman of public safety, and Sean Oliver, himself a member of the law enforcement community for many years. I thought Chief Thody, did a really good job last night. He's a professional, so you would expect that. Would have liked to have seen more of the city councilors there. Maria Giesta didn't bother to show up. I'm sure she'll still cash the check, but she ain't showing up anymore. That's unfortunate, really. I know the voters rejected her, but for her to reject the city that today she calls home, it's not where she was born. But it is the city she represented. Not really well, obviously. The voters rejected her. But for her to still continue to collect a paycheck and not show up to work, we've seen that before. Debbie Coello did the same thing. And I think the city of New Bedford has dodged a bullet by rejecting Maria Giesta's phone-it-in sort of attitude and embracing a much more energetic and focused Scott Pemberton. So congratulations, Ward 2. You were right. If you had any doubts, look at the way she's carrying out her last couple of assignments, right? Not showing up to the city council, even when you have in the chief of police. You would think the outgoing city councilor from Ward 2 would have a lot of questions about what can we do for my neighborhood to turn back the encroachment by the Latin Kings and others. But she collected the check and didn't show up. So, if you had any doubts about your votes, Ward 2, know that you made the right decision. Now, check out Boston Herald, bostonherald.com. Big article on Leo Choquette leaving the Democrat Party, fleeing the Democrat Party, and becoming a Republican. So Ward 1 city councilor, longtime proclaimed Democrat, has rejected the party of Maura Healey and become a Republican. Boston Herald has a great article by Tim Dunn covering that really well. A lot of quotes, quotables by Leo Choquette, a fresh newly minted Republican. Take a break, and then we'll be right back. Stick around. The program, I want to wish a happy birthday to Acushnet's own Bob St. Jean out on the Finance Committee, doing God's work out there on that Finance Committee in Acushnet. Happy birthday, Bob St. Jean. I go to the gym with his brother Larry. We see each other there on a regular basis at the gym. So we'll be joined by the mayor in the next hour. His chief of police was in front of the city council last night. I thought, obviously, he's a professional. I thought he did a good job. I also thought the city councilors did a good job asking him questions. Good questions about dirt bikes, right? ATVs, things like that. And what they've been doing on that. I think they've been, had a lot of success. And the new chief, Chief Thody, talking about partnering with the state police, using the helicopters to get some of those vehicles. I think that's fantastic, right? Absolutely fantastic. And it seems like the kid gloves are off with Chief Thody. That's my assessment. I've never met the man. I'd like to. I'd love to have him come in. But when I saw him last night, I thought,